up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Out, Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 4, NASDAQ futures down 13. Slipping a little bit, not that much. The show continues from Washington. Let's see, this morning, Trump fires Fed's Lisa Cook. She says he has no authority to. Something about magnets. Trump warns of 200% tariff on China if they don't send us magnets. Let's see, what else are we going on here? This is before breakfast, for God's sake. Trump files substantial new tariffs, chip restrictions on countries with digital taxes, wherever they are. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do. Hey, you want an even better one? I got a couple.
Well, go ahead.
Okay, so there's two. The first one is that a few days ago, you had a federal judge who ruled that it is illegal to burn Israel's flag in the United States. By the way, the Supreme Court says that burning flags is free speech.
We don't pay any attention to anybody anymore, Carl.
Well, and then yesterday, Trump comes out with an executive order that attempts to make it illegal to burn the United States flag. Now, that is especially amusing considering that the Supreme Court's already ruled on this question.
He doesn't care about the Supreme Court.
Well, it seems that neither do federal judges.
Right. Well, and there's nothing that says he can't burn Israeli flag. It's interesting. Well, flag.
Well, no. Actually, no. Trump didn't say you can't burn.
I know. The judge did.
This judge, however.
How did that get in front of a judge?
God, I don't know. And it did. So basically, you have that you have a ruling from a judge that burning a specific foreign flag is hate speech, and therefore not protected. However, burning the American flag is love speech.
I've always had an issue.
And then Trump tries to say, oh, no, the American flag. And it's like, guys, there happens to be a binding precedent on this one. Okay.
There is no precedent.
Apparently not. And oh, by the way, if in fact the allegation of the Fed board member, if the allegation against her is true, then her removal for cause is not only justified, it is absolutely imperative.
All right, here's a problem I'm having with a lot of you guys. I'll blurt it right out. Somewhere, someplace, and I have a very serious letter from a listener yesterday. Somewhere, someplace, the media and people who somehow still support this guy need to look at the process, because there are rumors flying about that because of the ability of the Doge people to get all this information from the IRS and from people's mortgages and things like that, which people probably never thought anybody could get into, that there is essentially a task force going through every major Democratic person and every person that the president doesn't like diving through all their records looking for crap. And if that's true, I tell you what, I don't care what they find, Carl.
If it is limited to one political party, then absolutely, okay. But let's be clear about what the allegation against this particular person on the Federal Reserve Board is. All right, this is a person who is in part in charge of not just setting the standard, you know, rate policy, not because it's one vote. Okay, no. Remember the board. Not with without the rotating people, okay? Because there's two elements of the board. You have the board plus a rotating set from the various regional Federal Reserve presidents to change. And
except the New York guy is always a voter.
Yeah, because you know New York's special, right?
Well, those are the guys that do all the actual buying and selling.
Yeah, they're the ones that actually sit on the desk, right,
yeah.
and execute the transactions. You know, remember when Geithner was doing this stuff. And he gets rewarded by being Treasury Secretary because he did what a particular president wanted when... you know, there's absolutely no corruption in any of these processes, I swear to God, and there never has been any time in history until Trump got in office. But the problem...
That's like saying some of my Notre Dame buddies, they see this incredible, whatever this is with this NIL, and
yeah.
People getting millions of dollars going back and forth, and they could care less about the school they're in or whatever. And somebody will say, oh, man, it was the same thing in the 50s when somebody got like $50 for a sport coat. What are you talking about?
It is
nah,
not.
I mean, yeah.
But here is my, all right, so here's the thing. You know, I haven't had to have a mortgage now for several decades, okay? But at one time, I did buy homes with a mortgage, all right? I mean, I actually sat in there, and by the way, I got a rectal exam because at the time I was running a small business, and boy, if you think, you know, it ain't just turn over your W-2, right? or your pay stub. That's not how it works when you run a small business and you want a mortgage. That was a rather interesting experience, and I'm like, "What do you mean you want the last 3 years of the company's financial statements?" but they did. Okay, fine, whatever. But emblazoned all over the application page and very clear was that I was signing that thing under penalty of perjury, and that I could go to prison if I lied. All right. And, there you go, right? So,
okay, if you sign up, this is not talking out of school, if you sign up for an account at PTI or any other brokerage firm,
yeah,
any place, it'll say on the back that, you know, under penalty of losing your left gonad or something.
Right.
Yet, if you've got $20 million, I guarantee you every person puts down, I got $2 million.
And as long as it's
plenty for anybody to not care about the risk they're taking, who cares?
But that isn't the issue in this case, okay? Because a primary residence mortgage carries a lower interest rate.
I understand that.
All right, than one that is not.
If she is at some party telling people how she's got 15 houses she rents and every one of them she's supposedly involved. If somebody says, find me something on this lady, and digging into her stuff that you don't dig into anybody else's, I got a real problem with it.
Chief, I don't care. Sorry, she is in.
All right, so you're the end justifies the means kind of guy.
No, I'm not. If you've got, you know, however many board members and district presidents that, you know, that rotate through this thing. Okay, these are people in primary decision-making roles that affect every single person in this country.
I understand.
If I want all of that.
This for this guy to call somebody else out for lying on a loan application is as big a pot calling the kettle black as I've ever seen in my life.
You know what? He was prosecuted for doing it too.
Yeah.
And you know, gee, isn't it interesting? by the way, that crazy fine, which had no bearing on anything that he might have actually obtained by that, was just thrown out by an appeals court. I'm assuming
it was not thrown out. It was not thrown out. The fine was thrown out. The conviction was not.
I didn't say the conviction.
Okay,
was
but
thrown out.
You implied that.
Okay, no, I said the fine was thrown out. No, I said the fine was thrown out, not the conviction.
And my point is if people are being targeted to go through all their paperwork back till they were 5 years old because you don't like them, you don't like their vote, that's a problem with me.
Okay, well, guess what? That just happened to the guy who's now sitting in the president's seat.
So he gets to do it with everybody else?
Excuse me, if you're not going to do anything to the people who did it to him, if it's not...
That's so retribution at any point in that position... You can break every law in this country because it's retribution to you.
Chief, malicious prosecution is supposed to be a felony. All right? It's not a civil...
Except the guy was guilty.
was he? Not a...
Okay, no. If the guy shot you tomorrow, we can't go after him because we picked on him before.
No, that's BS.
Okay, well, where's the limit? Where's the edge?
Where's the edge is the thing that occurred has to actually be... Look, if you're going to have... Let me ask you a question. We have right now, all right? We just have the pearl clutchers that were out. I just did an article on this. The pearl clutchers that are out because there are people who think that Luigi is some kind of a saint, right? Because he capped that guy from United Health, all right?
Well, we have a lot of weird people in this country right now.
Well, duh. All right, here's the problem I have with this. All right, he's sitting here saying this is a failure of psychoanalysis. We have to have people, because we have a grievance industry in this country. Well, guess what? We do have a grievance industry in this country. Okay, the complaint is accurate. The problem is that the entire reason that we have all these people who are aggrieved about the stuff that goes on when it comes to medicine in the United States is because they really have been bending you over the table and giving you the whole...
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
All right? And oh, by the way, now, it's one thing if you signed up for this and there's no laws that have been broken at all, okay? Unfortunately, that's not true.
I would agree with you. But, I mean, as everybody, you know, I'm getting texts from the people on the show, you know, calling me out... I would say that the loudest voice on this show, when Trump was being, you know, and Trump's probably been guilty of everything through his whole life, but the fact is, he was being picked out by people in various spots, and he had two or three things going. At least if you're going to come after a guy, do it in one spot. And I would say that I was the only person on this show that said, I don't care who you are, even him, who I detest, the government should never be able to run up a $40 million legal bill on you, because guess what? That's no justice for anybody. I don't care if it's him. I was the loudest voice on the show saying that was ridiculous what they did to him. That doesn't mean go to do what everybody else in revenge is okay.
I agree with
you. What does this lady make? If she sues to keep her job, what is the law firm going to charge her? What's she making that spot? $200,000 for all this abuse? How does she defend herself?
Well, I don't know.
I'll tell you, that's what they make, $200,000 or $220,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
So how the hell does she defend herself against his army of idiots in our justice system? She doesn't, even if she's absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, he's not prosecuting her.
I understand that. But if she says, he does not have the right to fire me, And files a suit, what's that going to cost her?
Well, guess what? The text of the statute, which, by the way, is the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, okay, specifically covers this and says that a person on the board can only be removed for cause. Does not define cause.
The part I'm missing, I think you support her. Let's put it this way. You Democratic haters...
I'm not a Democrat. Okay, I don't know how she voted.
Okay,
I don't know who she voted for.
My point is that somewhere in this mess, we have people that, because they like the idea that he's firing people and they think it's a TV show and not a governance, that somehow or another, we're going with this. I listened to I got so, I don't know, bent on this stuff, whatever you want to call it, 2 weeks ago when I was listening to one of his morons on Face the Nation. I don't know who the guy was. The lady asked him something about emergency tariffs, and his definition was, anything the president says is an emergency is an emergency.
Yeah, well, that's BS.
Okay, well, now, everything now, I'm telling you, I've heard from somebody who didn't want, just said, you didn't hear it from me, but there is a group that is going through all the Doge crap, the Supreme Court says they can have Carl's IRS returns. By the way, the guy quit because of that, right? And he was a Trump guy, wasn't he? The guy in the IRS? He didn't want... He was removed because he didn't want to do it.
I don't think it was the IRS guy. There was a guy in CMS.
No, the guy who just gave the ambassadors to Iceland. They put him on ice, literally.
Oh, well, there. All right. Yeah, well, you know what? There's so many moving parts in this.
He said that he didn't think it was appropriate for people to start looking at people's tax returns. And then they kicked him out. So, okay, they can go after your mortgage returns. They can go after your tax returns if they don't like you. Well, I have a problem with that. I'm sorry, and I think most people should.
Well, I have a problem with it too, but it's been going on since the beginning.
Don't start. Name me another Doge.
Okay. How about Hoover?
Hoover? We weren't even alive. What do we care?
It doesn't matter. Nobody.
No, I'm saying how can we prove you're right or wrong?
Because
how about J. Edgar Hoover? We couldn't wait to get rid of him. Most people couldn't.
Well, okay. Well, you know, that very, very well be true. Look,
I thought you were talking about Herbert Hoover.
Been
a couple of Hoovers. You got to specify which one you're talking about.
I'm talking.
By the way, were they related at all? I don't think so. Were they?
But by the way, they named. Not only did they not throw him out, they named a building after the asshole. So
first thing he did was get stuff on everybody.
You look at the stuff that came out on King, you know, which they tried to hide that they had gathered on him, right, over the years, and finally gets prized out.
Yeah.
By the way, there's another thing that I had heard a very long time ago from some people who probably had reason to know about what he actually did to get the Civil Rights Act signed. And you want to talk, I mean, today, if you did something like that, they'd bring terrorism charges against you and throw you in prison for the rest of your life until something happened.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned something earlier about the Israeli flag. I've had an issue with day one from these hate crimes. If you go kill somebody, what's the difference whether you hated them? You couldn't have liked them or you wouldn't have killed them.
Well, Chief, my point of view is that the offense is the offense.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have always said this, that this concept of hate crimes is garbage. Okay. So there you go. I look at this kind of thing, and there's every administration tries to find a way to get around the rules, which we would call laws if they were actually obeyed.
And by the way, everyone makes a little more progress towards it.
Yeah, and funny how that works. I mean, you know, during the crazy, I was heavily censored by every single social media and advertising network. I was forced to split my blog into two pieces because things that I'd written 15 years earlier were deemed medical misinformation. And they had been perfectly fine for 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, here it is. All right, now, the problem with this is, once this happens, okay, now, you know, Biden and his merry band that were involved in doing this, and by the way, Bernstein sued and managed to prize out enough information.
By the way, we forget that the first year and a half of this was under Trumpy.
I don't forget it at all, but guess what? The censorship didn't start till Biden came in. Okay, I wrote hundreds of articles during that first year when Trump was in office blasting what they were doing, and nobody gave a wet bleep about any of it.
How much of that do you think came from? Where do you think that came from? Because I know
exactly.
I know a doctor who got a letter from the state of Illinois
Yeah.
Talking about.
No, I know exactly.
Do you think I don't think that. Where do you think? I don't think they came from Biden.
It most certainly did. Bernstein proved
it. I'm not saying he disapproved it. I'm saying.
No, what I'm telling you is what actually happened, because there was a journalist who happened to have the backing of people with enough money to be able to go after the government over it. Right? It took 2.5 years for him to manage to get discovery. You know, that's how they do it, right? They stonewall and try to run out your cash because you can't pay the lawyers to sue and sue again. Well, he didn't have that problem. So he sued and sued again and sued again, and finally gets the discovery that the Biden administration had a working group that was absolutely illegal, because what it was doing was running around coordinating and getting the flag set within the various media companies, the social media firms, the Facebooks, the Googles, the Twitter at the time, okay? And they were essentially controlling the censorship regime from the White House.
Okay, well,
that's illegal.
I'm with you. It all started with, Trump's group. And this is not, I'm just telling you the history of it. It all started with Trump's group buying into the vaccine thing to such a tremendous amount that they gave 7 companies, they bought how many doses before they were even made in advance?
Oh, I know.
Okay, so if you were to go out and started criticizing that from day one.
I did.
Okay, and they didn't like it either.
Well, guess what? They didn't try it, but they didn't try to shut me
well,
up.
Well, it was all a process. If he was still there, they probably would have.
All I'm saying is the forcible shutting up didn't happen until Biden came into office.
Okay, but I'm saying that it was all, if you took it together and didn't realize that there was a change at the top, it looks like the same program, doesn't it?
Well,
and you're the one who's taught me that. If you go back 30 years and look at the labor numbers, you can't tell when one guy left and the other guy went in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But there is a difference between, stupidly spending American taxpayer money on something that ultimately our own NIH and CDC now says doesn't work. That was dumb. However, there's a difference between dumb and criminal.
Well, what do you think Mr. Thinskin would have done if he'd have won instead of Biden, and everybody in the world kept saying what a horrible idea this was, and you can't do these COVID shots? Would he have been any worse?
I'd already been saying it, and he hadn't tried to shut me up, so I don't know what he would have done, because that's a nice what if. But the fact of the matter is,
it didn't. This all happened. He was there 8 months. All started March of 20, right? And he was gone.
I get that, and you know what? From the very first thing that he did. Okay, all the way back to before it started, because I was doing nightly, at the time it started, I was doing nightly podcasts on his second impeachment. And I was ripping the living crap out of both sides.
Okay, but here's what I'm trying to get to. Without the name part, which I'm being just as bad or probably worse than you are on this now, which is bad. The fact is, and I think I was on record 100 times of saying, I never dreamed that the censorship and all that kind of stuff was going to come from the left. People always thought it was going to come from the right, and it didn't.
And it didn't, that's right.
Well, the left was as bad or worse, let's put it that way, probably worse. I never dreamed, but it's been happening from everybody now for how long? Why are we, and the younger people, they don't have any clue. I must have talked to, I had 3 younger people 2 weeks ago, and I said, one of the guys brings up the executive order regarding the NIL. And I said, what exactly is an executive order? And he goes, what do you mean? It's a law. I go, no, it's not. What do you mean? Why would anybody do it if it's not a law? I said, you got to ask the orange man. I don't know. I mean, the thing, the executive order against flag burning, it doesn't come with a penalty. What's the jail term? I mean, what's he going to do? Send his people after you with a hanging noose or what? I mean there's no crime involved there. I mean, how can somebody? What is it? Does anybody? But the fact is, it's the big lie. It's just like out of Mein Kampf. Keep doing it. People think. What percentage of the population think it's a law? I'm going to say 75.
All I'm pointing out here is that we have You know, nobody's... Here's... I guess this is the way to look at it, the right way to look at it, all right? Now, I've been raising a stink about the selective enforcement of various laws for a very long time, all right? And the selective non-enforcement, you know, in the context of healthcare, the entire reason the federal government is going broke, the whole reason, is that they're not doing it in healthcare.
Why... Just out of curiosity, this is a big, and again, I think one of the themes of the show, and you guys play along with me on this, and thank you for that, it's all the same subject. Not going after the people in healthcare, to me, is sort of the same not going as going the guy going 90 miles an hour down the shoulder, or the guy going 110 miles an hour with the loud car, all blacked out windows, on the Dan Ryan. No, or the medical community, or antitrust. What is it... Why don't we just fire all these people? They're not doing anything. Why are we paying them? I don't get it. I mean, I never see a police car any place. I mean, but it's the same thing. When was the last time you saw an antitrust thing? Now, this morning, they got what's his name? The guy from Omaha, Warren Buffett, opining on whether he should take the other railroad over and making two railroads in the country, except for the Canadian National. Why are we even having this discussion? Two railroads? Really? what are we doing here? Now what? Oh, yeah. Trump's going to buy into him and say he wants 10%, and nobody, there'll never be another railroad? I mean, what is the progression here? Does anybody even know what it is?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, how the hell how would Carl Inc. compete with Intel now that they got their nose so far up the ass of government and they're a shareholder, for God's sake?
Yeah, well, you know, what would you like me to tell you on that one?
I mean, it's somebody's system. It's not ours, but evidently maybe it's going to be ours. I mean, it's somebody's. It's exactly the fascist system, exactly. One or two, and their intermediaries were the banks. They pretty much controlled the banks, and the banks owned the companies, and there were three, four companies in every division, industry. Their nose up the ass of the bank, and the bank of the nose up the ass of the Fuhrer. What's the difference?
Well, I think that's a valid question, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, how do you compete with somebody who gets money from the government and you got to go get what? How do Carl and Chief start your place back up using money from a credit card at 25% and compete with anybody?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously that's an issue, right?
A big one.
You look at, I mean, like, one of the things that I think is so interesting is you know, you sent around a thing, and others have as well, you know, how terrible life is that, you know, that we took non-voting equity for this stuff with, you know, with Intel.
Non-voting does not mean non-influence.
Okay. Well,
especially with the man in charge we have now. You think?
Well, we can.
He's going to tell you how to take a dump. This guy.
All right. Wait a minute. Excuse me, but he didn't just pull the cash out of his butt. The Biden administration passed the CHIPS Act. That's where the money came from. All right. And secondly, the Biden administration then showered large amounts of this cash on a ton of firms that said they were going to build foundries and things like that in the United States, and then didn't. And so they took the money, and we got nothing for it. So, you know, there's a difference between, you know, to a large degree, it's the same thing as you have going on with this healthcare stuff. Well,
it's the same thing going on with the states. How much of Wisconsin give the idiots in Kenosha?
Well, that exactly. Okay, precisely the point is that, the you know, those guys handed Foxconn all this stuff, right, on the come. Basically no property taxes for all intents and purposes on this huge industrial property that would normally be paying millions of dollars a year.
Carl,
right?
But who are the... It all comes down... And by the way, you've been the biggest champion of this, right? It all comes down to, do we have a population that is somewhat moral, somewhat educated? I'm not saying everybody's got to be a genius or everybody's got to be a saint. Somewhat moral, somewhat educated, because, I mean, if you go back to, you know, Thomas Jefferson, when the Constitution came out and stuff, he said, if people lose religion and their morals, this thing isn't worth basically the power to blow it up. Now, Now, if you came to Chicago and Chicago's in bad shape, if you say, boy, I wanted this piece of property on the south side, which you can get for probably nothing, we're going to buy it, and we're going to set up, and I'm going to have a place that is going to build, pick my favorite subject. We're gonna refurbish buses and make buses and make railroad cars and refurbish stuff. And boy, at the top of our, when I'm done, we're going to be have 1,500 people here. And by the way, right. You get all your, and I might say, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm a Chicago guy. Everybody's got to wet their beak a little bit. I get it. Well, if you're going to do that, guess what? I'll make sure that the Rock Island, for instance, it goes right by. We'll put a station there. If you got 2,000 people that are going to get on and off the platform. Or if you're in one of the burbs, yeah, we'll find a way to put a power station down there. If you need more water, we'll put a bigger... We'll do the stuff that we're supposed to do as a city for you. Not just for you, but because of the fact that we should be able to support that from what we do. This is our job. Okay.
Right.
Now my line is, no, we're not going to give the tax payments that are supposed to go to the state to you. We're not going to say you don't have to pay property taxes when everybody else does. That I have my line, but it appears that other people don't have the same line, and some people are whatever you know you got to have them here. You got to pay them everything. You got to look at what we're doing for everybody around you. We're responsible for everything. Yet in my point of view, a city or an economy that's working well, it's like a human body. It's either all working or it's not. you can't say this factory is pulling the whole thing for everybody else, because they weren't, because other people train these people. Other people are providing their infrastructure. They're providing a lot of their widgets and all the other stuff that they're using. It either all works or it doesn't. And yet everybody seems to be the person who wants to be pulled out. No, I don't have to pay any taxes. I don't have to do this. Once you start doing that, I think you're on a road that gets you nowhere. That's my economic theme to the thing.
Right.
I think you agree with me on that.
Yeah. Well, when you get down to it, the body of laws that govern this kind of behavior, allegedly, right? I mean, because they're ignored.
But it's not laws. It's common sense. I mean, that's the...
Well, Chief, I get all that, okay? But the thing is this. You can't legislate common sense. You can legislate laws.
Well, hey, we're going to have to... Why don't you hang on in case Kenny doesn't call in. I think he will. I think we have Joel. Joel,
yeah,
we got you, buddy?
Are you guys trying to talk common sense?
Well, we know that's a... we're not supposed to talk.
I just might get off here right now if you're trying to talk common sense.
Well, I guess our theme is the laws are the laws, but if you don't have some idea of where they came from and how far they go, they're useless, basically.
And what are you referring to?
Just about anything. Just about anything. Whatever topic we're on, it's like how much help do you give a certain firm if they're starting a place up? There's kind of a limit to it. Now, what's the limit? The limit is not as much as how much they give the politician or those kinds of things. The limit should be, okay, we'll do our job as the city. You do your job as the manufacturing firm. If you need enough water here, we'll get it to you. You need enough sewage, we'll get it to you. You need an L-stop, we'll get it for you. We're not going to say you don't have to pay taxes. We're not going to do any of the other kind of stuff that people seem to be doing now. I mean, there's somewhat of a common sense limit to this where everybody does their job, right? And we don't seem to have that in some ways. Just saying.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know, Chief.
We started this by government taking pieces of companies, and how does anybody compete with that company if the government?
I don't know. I mean, there's precedence for this. We all remember Government Motors. Okay, we see
that was a loan that got paid back.
Okay. I don't understand it. Intel still needs to make better chips. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't care if, you know, who takes a 10% stake in them. They need to hire better people, and they got to do it. And right now, we have no evidence of that. So if you're a shareholder in this, then You know, you're banking on them becoming a better company, which has been a historical underperformer. I mean, I don't think it ever got back to its 2000 peaks. It was a $60, $70 stock in late 2021. I mean, underperformance, you can't highlight any more of an underperformance in not one of the hottest sectors. So from an I had owned a stock for years, I had dumped it, I took a loss on it, and I no interest in getting back into it. So that's my technical. The technicals are horrible. The fundamentals, the only fundamental you have is that the government took a 10% stake. New chips competing with the, can they compete with NVIDIA? Can they compete with AMD? To be determined.
By the way, you know where they were in, you probably know this, 5-2 1997 was their top. What do you suppose it was?
85?
No, 160-something.
Oh, really? Has there been any splits or anything?
No. I don't think so. These charts usually... And in 2000, right before 5-1-2000, it was back up to, what does this thing show? 124. 5-1-2000. Wow.
In the hottest, chips. Yeah. Chips. Just think about it. The underperformance. So, sure, things can turn around.
It was a buy, by the way. Get a little, boy, what the hell? On 7-3-2006, get a load of this. What was going on then, Joel? Boy, I don't expect you to run. The high was 1939. The low was 7.95, and it closed at 18.01. What the hell was that?
They might have done a split or something.
There must have been some kind of a crash show that day in this stock because it.
What year?
2006. Evidently, it traded almost below $8 and closed the day at 18.
And on my monthly.
You know what, Joel? It must have been one of those where people had a fat finger on the downside or something.
But still,
it was $18.
Pretty granular. But what else? We got a few minutes left here, Chief.
What do you think happens with this? I mean, this lady getting fired. Now, suppose she stays fired and he puts somebody else in there. If we start running interest rates down, what do you think happens?
I think inflation comes roaring back.
You think it's already here?
It's already here, and it will get worse.
Then what? 30-year and 10-year rates start going up?
Chief, I was just talking with my producers, and we have to cover this, and I'm like, I don't want to cover this. But there's a lot of implications for the short end and the long end, and I honestly can say I cover a lot of things in the markets and a lot of them pretty well. This isn't one of them. I just am a firm believer that rate, and I've been saying this for a long time, that rates need to be stable. I thought whatever, late on raising them, rate on lowering them. I think stability for rates in the markets is what we need. That's what I think. I think lowering rates at this time is not necessary. But you know what? I'm not a Fed governor. I'm not president of the United States. In fact, I took econ pass-fail at Michigan, and I barely passed it.
I'm surprising because you're pretty bright on this.
Well, it's just from talking to you. And talking to markets, and I was growing up as a kid, my dad, he always emphasized the markets and currencies and things. So it's more from my osmosis than reading books, put it that way.
Well, you're the school of hard knocks.
Yep.
Well, as you mentioned that, I would say that this was on the tip, knowing this kind of stuff. In the 70s and 80s was something everybody did. It was like in the Vietnam era, everybody watched the news because you could be over there being shot at. So to say that you were up on it, when inflation was part of your everyday life, and you're talking about escalation clauses and union contracts and people getting raises because it was on the tip of everybody's tongue. I mean, right now, I could walk in any coffee shop or bar and sit down with some learned people, and everybody will tell me that the Fed controls all the rates. And that's not true. No. It's absolutely not true.
There's a lot of different
What factors. They control is the amount of money in the pool today, which is short-term federal funds rate, which is an overnight rate. That's what they control, right?
Yep, and the pool's getting deeper and wider. Yeah.
And if all of a sudden the what they're doing means that somebody loaning somebody money for 10 years says, wait a minute, you got to give me like a lot more, because at the end of 10 years, this stuff isn't going to be worth near as much as I give it to you today. We've lost all track of that.
Yep.
We absolutely, yep. And you can talk to your blue in the face and nobody has an idea what you're talking about.
2 weeks in a row, we're not getting to the Michigan stuff. Well,
You call in when Kevin's on, because he's all over that too.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'll
so
try.
How long is Harbaugh out? Like 18 years or something?
It's like 10 years. I'm really thinking of firing up my poison pen about this. The show calls for 10 years if he wants to come back to the NCAA. Ha ha. Joke's on you. He's never coming back. There's a lot to this story, Chief, with Harbaugh, the NCAA, the evolution of college football. This is so much deeper than what the NCAA trying to, oh, look what we did to Michigan. Oh, we buried them. Absolutely not. This is a slap in the wrist. They don't know what the hell they're doing.
How long was the show cause to the guy from Southern Cal, who's now coaching Las Vegas, isn't he? What's his name?
Pete Carroll.
Yeah, how long is he out? Like 20 years? He was out forever.
This could be like a 2-hour topic, but I gotta hop.
All right, buddy, you take it. By the way, I'd love to be back on again. I think it was on your end because I went right on something else afterwards.
Chief, we gotta talk about this because there was something. There was some setting you had, but we'll do a test. I'll do a test with you next week. I'm gonna fast market.
Okay,
I gotta
take care, bud.
Join the Stock Trader Network today. That's all I have to say.
Do we have Kenny or we got Carl back?
I don't see Kenny, but we still have Carl.
All right. You got me.
But speaking of enforcement, Carl, what do you think's going on with the NCAA? What's that all about?
Oh, my God. So here's what I don't quite understand, right? I mean, you know, this whole sign-stealing thing, right? Exactly how does all of this become an offense? I mean, if I can manage to figure out how to steal your stuff,
you're missing this one. You don't usually miss, but you're missing this one. I think we're not talking about if the third base coach is given signs to the catcher, and you can get a pattern there.
I can figure out what they are. Right.
I think most people would say that's part of the game.
That's kind of my
if the home team puts a camera in center field, it's kind of a different show, right?
Okay. Yeah. Now that's
I think what the Michigan thing is, and Kevin knows.
So is that the allegation that literally?
Yeah. It wasn't actually. What happened is because of budgetary constraints, big school, little school. You were, I think Kevin knows this more than me, but you were not supposed to send coaches, scouts, whatever it is, to somebody else's game on your dime. In other words, Michigan couldn't send you and me on their dime to another. Say we're playing Ohio State next week. We can't send people to the Ohio State game this week to sit in the stands with cameras and binoculars. And try and find a pattern to this, because every school can't afford it. You don't want every school sending 10 people going someplace, staying overnight in their budget, for the idea of stealing signs from the other team. And it's had something to do with that, I believe.
Okay, well, that if that's what the allegation is, then yeah, then at that point, yes.
I think we might. Do we have Kevin in the room?
I think we do have Kevin.
Kevin, was I anywhere near close to being right there? If he's there.
Oh, well, he's up. But
he's in the meeting. He's just not answering.
Not talking.
All right. Well, yeah. But he'll are you there?
Who are you asking about, me?
Talking Kevin.
Oh, no, I'm Kenny.
Oh, Kenny. Oh, Kenny's in the room. you weren't there. We're talking about sign stealing in Michigan.
Yeah, yeah, no, I came in late to the conversation, so I didn't hear the whole thing, but I wasn't sure you were asking me to comment.
No, I said something about that we'll talk about it with Kevin tomorrow, because he was kind of all over it. And then when Ricky said, I thought he said Kevin was in the meeting, he said Kenny was in the meeting. Okay, fair enough. So you're here. What's up, bud?
How are you?
Is the government going to take a part of Polcari Inc. or Polcari Pizza?
No, there's nothing really to take from Polcari Inc. But Intel, that's a different
How
story.
How about Polcari Pizza?
Could be. Maybe.
If I were you guys, I'd get down there.
Yeah, I hear you. But, no, it's interesting, this whole Intel conversation, because I talked about this yesterday with Fox Digital. You know, I'm mixed on whether I think it's a good idea. So here's where I come out on it. As long as, listen, they ask for money, we're giving the money. We're meaning the government,
did they ask?
Taxpayers.
Are you sure about that?
Well, let's put it this way. I guess the first grant that Biden gave them, right, where they were part of that grant process that we invested in Intel. Then Intel came to the White House, had a meeting with Trump, and why are we giving them more money? Did they ask for more money, or did Trump offer more money? I don't know, because I wasn't in that meeting.
Well, first he wanted the guy fired, then he came out his best buddy.
Well, you're correct, so we could have that conversation too. But in the end, if we as a government are giving them money, and it's your money and my money, taxpayers' money, then should we stand to benefit? Should this be a good thing? So I'm in this camp that if we don't have control, if Trump is not in the boardroom or he's not in the C-suite, he's got no control over the decisions they make and what they do, yet we're just a passive investor the same way you are in other stocks you own, is it okay to be an investor in Intel? And I come out on it, well, I think it's okay as long as the government doesn't have direct control over what happens at the company. We gave the money. We're a passive investor. I think if it takes off and Intel doubles in price, the taxpayers should benefit. So I'm in the camp that it's okay. Now, I'm not in the camp that the government, that we should give the money and then the government should walk in there and take over and then sit in the C-suite and make decisions. That I'm not okay with, because then that's government control of a private industry, and so I'm not okay with that. But I'm kind of okay with the fact of, if we're making an investment, a passive investment with no control, then I'm okay with it.
But how does this become even for everybody?
Well, even for everybody, what do you mean? Because if this works, taxpayers as a whole, so everybody in the country, would benefit as a result of this event.
The whole idea, man, I guess I gotta go back and read more about the Biden thing, where all this money came from, but the whole idea of these kinds of investments, I don't have a problem with the infrastructure part, but giving people money when everybody else, you and I, are basically borrowing on our credit card,
correct,
I got a problem with. I mean who gets, I don't want up like Germany, where there's three companies in every industry with the nose up the ass of government.
Agreed. Listen, I'm okay with not giving them any money and stepping back and letting, and see who survives. And if they fail, they fail, and it's no skin off my back. But if we're going to give them money for whatever reason, however they did it, did they ask for money? Did we volunteer the money? I'm not really sure, because I wasn't in the meetings. But if we're going to give them the money, then we as taxpayers should benefit. All taxpayers should benefit, and we would if this works out, right? I mean, if suddenly this works out and Intel's trading doubles in price, then the country, the taxpayers, would benefit. How do we benefit? Are we going to get a check back? I don't know. Are we going to pay down the debt? I'd like to think so.
Well, you and I have, I think, the same, I'll use the term, problem. We look at a deal and we say, okay, what about the deal? And you're right, it could work out. I've always been in the camp that says if the city has to pony up, $400 million for $2 billion now for a stadium for a team, we better come away with the real Chicago Bears own 25% of the place. We just built their place for them, for God's sake. So I understand where you're coming with this, but by the same token, you and I, have other things we do in our life, but we've dedicated our life to a system where people can raise money through the stock market, the bond market, and other places, and that's how we decided to do it in this country hundreds of years ago.
Okay.
Now are we saying that's no longer the system if you bring the suitcase to the White House, that you get to go around that? I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Well, so that's a very interesting take on it. I agree with you. If they want to raise money or if they need money, they should go to the public markets. And if the public markets support them, then they win. If the public markets don't bite into it and don't support them, I guess then they lose. So that's a fair point. So again, I wasn't in the meetings in the White House. I don't understand what the conversation was, what we committed to, what we didn't commit to. All I'm saying is that if Trump committed to giving the money, then we as taxpayers should stand in a position to benefit. That's all. I'm not suggesting. I think they should have gone the traditional way, go to the public markets and see if you get the help.
Do you think
you do great
without ever?
But that's not what happened.
Do you ever, without meeting the man, just watching the activity for 40 years since he sang at the Cub game, do you think there's any chance that he or people around him didn't get a piece of this?
Personally, you may get a piece of
it.
Yeah. Well, not if they're using taxpayer money. If he took his own money and invested.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying it's a group that wants a little control on just about everything. I don't know what the deal is either. Like you, I probably shouldn't be accusing, but it just seems odd. Now, what if you're another chip company? This one has always been.
Well, that's right. So this is the slippery slope. So what about AMD coming to the table? What about any of the other companies coming to the table? That's right. Again, which is why I'm not, I want to tread lightly here because I wasn't part of the conversation. I don't know what was said, what was promised, what we're getting in return. All I'm saying is that if we're giving them the money, then we should stand to benefit.
This is kind of bizarre as it may seem, Kenny. It hits close to home because I think you probably know a little bit of our history. Our firm started from option education, basically.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where we never held the seminars because you can't advertise them. For God's sake, if you got any numbers behind your name, and you and I have them. So there was a couple of seminar groups that would come to Chicago, and they would hold seminars. And back in those days, we had a trading floor. The things we would set up would be like the mock trading on the trading floor, those kinds of things. We weren't part of the advertising, we weren't part of any of that stuff that you're not supposed to do. If we weren't supposed to, we never did. And we would give a lecture that I would represent the CBOE in terms of volatility or something. And my brother would give a lecture regarding how to choose a brokerage firm, what this kind of order was, that kind of order, something like that. Something very approved, very basic.
Well,
I would say that for a period of time, this group, with our help, brought in 60 people at a time, maybe every 4 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yep.
And it was a 5-day deal, and everybody stayed in hotels here, ate here, all that stuff. Same time the White Sox and everybody else were out with their hand out.
Right.
And I would talk to people, and they'd say, well, we got to give the White Sox money or the Cubs money because look at the people they bring in. I said, well, how many do they bring in? Well, they bring in all kinds. No, how many do they bring in?
Right.
Well, I have no idea. It must be thousands, but you don't know. I said, okay, I can tell you that we bring in, whatever. At the time, the second biggest tourist attraction in the city of Chicago was the Board of Trade Visitors Gallery.
Yeah.
Okay.
The same way the New York Stock Exchange without a doubt. Does.
So, okay, so now if the Cubs can say they bring in 10,000 people a year and we're going to pay them X and we bring in 1,200 people a year, where's the window? Where's our spot?
Right.
Where's our application? And once you go down this road and only a few people get it, I have a personal problem with it because of that, probably.
Right. Right. So I'm not saying that I completely agree with it or that I want it to be that way. But again, I wasn't, I'm only going on what I know. And what I know is that we're apparently giving them money. Okay, so if we're giving them money, then we, as a nation, as taxpayers, should stand in a position to benefit. That's all.
I don't disagree. Why do we think that lack of money was the problem?
Well, I don't know what the problem was, so therefore I can't really speak to it, right? I'm guessing that obviously somebody needed money, or we thought it was a good idea to invest in them, whether or not because it's going to bring, maybe it's going to bring manufacturing back or create more jobs, and it's going to be better for the U.S. economy. And so net-net, it's going to benefit in a number of ways. And then one of the other ways is we as a country, as taxpayers, would benefit. Again, it's a slippery slope. They should never have done it in the first place. They should have gone to the public markets. But since they didn't, and he's trying to come up with creative ways to help industry, I guess that's how you have to look at it, right?
Kenny, creative financing. Do you have any sense? I think your sense on it is way better than mine. Because I remember those guys being one of the top five stocks in 2000. I was just going over with,
yeah,
with Joel.
Yeah.
Hell, they were 150 bucks.
Intel was the NVIDIA.
But now,
right?
AMD used to be in what, 4% of people's computers or something.
Yeah.
They were there just so Intel wasn't a monopolist. They were there just to say there was another person. Do you have any idea over a 20-year period how these guys essentially lost their testosterone?
I don't know how Intel lost it, but they did. They lost it. AMD didn't.
And all of a sudden, AMD is kicking. They were just there just to say there was a competitor. They weren't anything. And all of a sudden now, you know, I mean, I'm looking at two old machines in our place, Intel inside. I mean, what do you suppose happened? Just they got people at this. They didn't have to. It happens to drug companies, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, for 10 years, they
don't know. I don't know what happened, but it's that would be a very interesting conversation to have. I'd have to do some homework on it and figure out where, you know, one took a left, the other took a right, and you know, one's still very much in business and still very much a part of the ecosystem, yet the other one is struggling.
Well, how many drug companies?
I don't know enough about it to know.
Well, if we were both professors, which means we have a bunch of guys running around just doing what we told them to do, what do you think would happen if we took five of the drug companies and studied them for the last 20 years? I'll bet we'd find one or two that haven't come up with anything. They just bought other places that had stuff.
They grew through acquisition, right?
How do they get like that? You just put people on top that have no one, or they don't care? They just get a check or what?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question.
In our business, we're only as good as today's trades, right?
It never gets old. That's correct. We're only as good as today's trade. Tomorrow's another day, right?
Hey, did you guys, the hurricane nail anybody?
No,
the
hurricane did not nail us at all. It went right off the coast. As a matter of fact, I was on Fox yesterday, and they had a weather segment on this while I was on the show, and I had a conversation with the weather woman there, Britta Meyer or something, and I was asking her about what's it look like over the course of the next month, and she said right now it's all quiet. She said, you know, it's a very interesting time of year. September and October is really the time of year where you have to really worry about hurricanes along the eastern seaboard. And she said right now it looks relatively quiet. This other one that went out, Erin, that turned and veered out to the ocean, did turn into a category 4 or 5, but it was way out in the middle of the ocean, so it didn't bother anybody. There's another one that's apparently rearing its head, but she doesn't think it's going to come together. It's called Fernand or something.
Yeah, something like that.
She doesn't think it's going to come together. She thinks it's going to sputter out. But then she said she didn't see anything yet further out, you know, towards the end of the month. Nothing yet. So let's keep our fingers crossed. Maybe this hurricane season is not going to be what it was last year.
Well, the one guy was saying that the Gulf is so warm, one better not get in there. But
right.
Somehow they think they're not going to. They're all gonna. There's something that's keeping them out in the ocean.
Well, remember last year there were hurricane. It was September. There was one every week for 3 or 4 weeks that came through the Gulf.
Yeah, you don't want that because it's hot, I guess. What so you were just in New York, but now you're back in Florida.
No, I'm actually back in New York. So here's what I'm gonna tell you. I'm back in New York now because that Yahoo podcast that I've been doing since January has now been canceled. The podcast was canceled, but it turned into a 5-day-a-week live streaming show that's going to kick off on September 8th.
Wow, good for you.
I'll be the anchor of the show. So it's going to run on Yahoo Finance from 2:30 to 3 o'clock Monday through Friday starting September 8th. So I'm here for a couple of weeks because the first week I'm going to launch it from the New York Stock Exchange.
Hey, good for you.
And then after that I'm going to do it
from
Florida.
So they gave you your access back.
So they get, yeah, you know what? I never actually lost my access. Oh, I always had a media badge to get into the exchange because I was always doing a lot of media. So, yeah, but it's exciting. You know, I'm excited about it. It kicks off on September 8th. And then after that, they came down and built a studio in my office. So then I'll just do it live from my office. So I'm excited about that. It's all coming. That's you know, exciting news that I'm going to start to promote probably by the end of the week once we get all the material
ready.
Well,
hell, let us know. We'll promote best we can, bud. You know that.
Yeah. And actually, maybe one day we'll flip the switch and you'll be my guest.
You sure you want that? I might be too controversial.
I'll let you know.
It's weird, Kenny. I'm guessing a couple other things.
Yeah.
I have really no. Well, I mean, people may think I'm a lunatic, but I don't have any problem doing this show because I have. I know who my guests are, and I get enough feedback from the listeners. I kind of know who I'm talking to.
Right.
Whenever I get on, I was on a show last week where it's. Well, it's very progressive. I don't know why exactly they got me on there, but and you can just tell from the people before you, they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Mm.
I mean, as a matter of fact, the question was, why does a Fed rate decision affect any of us? And I'm like, God, where do I start with that one?
Speaking of the Fed, did he really say anything on Friday that the market wasn't already expecting? He didn't commit to a rate cut. He suggested that there's a possibility that rates are going lower. The market was already pricing in a 25 basis point cut in September. So he didn't, in my mind, I thought Friday's reaction to the market, to that news, was way overdone. But again, it's the end of August. Moves are exaggerated. People are away from their desks. There's less volume, so moves tend to be exaggerated. So I'm scratching my head thinking, okay, why was there that dramatic move when he didn't promise additional cuts? He didn't promise we were going to get, 100 basis points. He didn't promise anything other than to say it may be time to consider changing course. Okay, but the market already knew that.
All right, let me run one at you here. And then just, it's just a shot from left field like I always do. If you went back and listened to the Nixon-Kennedy debate on radio,
yeah,
you would have thought Nixon won.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was too young at the time to have paid attention, I'm not familiar with the debate, but I will go and listen to it.
My read of Friday from Powell and how he looks now, he looks like he's been beaten up.
Yeah.
You look at him, you look at the tone, you look at the body language.
Right.
The message is a complete capitulation.
Well, I think that's why.
It had nothing. Right. You could read what he said all day long. It's not the message.
Right. I think it's exactly that. I think it was the tone, how he said it, what people's perception was. And I think that's the reason the market reacted the way it did. But I'm not necessarily sure that that's correct. That's the correct reason to just go out and buy stocks because it looks capitulated.
I'm saying is, if they're going to pour money, this is a, as you know, I've been talking about this for a while. This during the 2000 thing when they poured all the money in for Y2K and all the other stuff, and the market shot up. The market was going up anyway, and then they just poured gasoline on a fire and it shot up even more. Correct.
Yeah.
So, as soon as they did that, they started to pull the money back.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, these stocks came flying down. But I don't think the people who owned those stocks at the time had such a control of whatever goes on in Washington. I mean, now the bubble has been created with the COVID situation. I mean, these stocks are up, they're probably 40% higher than they ought to, I won't say than they ought to be, but that historically, maybe they would normally be. Is that a fair statement? I mean, a lot of them are.
I think you're right.
But now the politics are, no, you're not going to pull the money out of the system. You're not going to let the stocks fall where they may, like in 2000 or 2001 or whenever it all happened. We have to maintain the bubble because that's the wealth in the country now. It's a whole different, my question is, how far do you go?
I mean,
Weimar, Argentina, Venezuela, they kept going because rich people were making money and people were paying off their loans with cheaper money. And now the power in that group is very entrenched now. You're not going to get somebody in there to say, God, guys, we got this price level that's gagging people. We got to pull 15% of this or 10% of this money out of the system. And by the way, if the market goes down 25%, we don't give a crap because that's what it ought to be anyway. That message would be a serious fart in church. Right now. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, now you can't do it because now it's too entrenched. That's the wealth.
Right. Okay. But so what are you saying? Are you saying that he's capitulated and rates are going lower?
I think they're going to go lower. We're going to maintain this. And the only thing that could possibly happen, which maybe would happen is the long-term rates are going to come flying up because of the inflation expectations.
Well, and so that's the rub, right?
But that's not what you want to see.
No, absolutely not what you want to see. 100% not what you want to see. And that's going to happen if, in fact, they reignite inflation. Like, look, you and I lived it, 1979, 1980. I hate to keep going back there, but that's where we can point to history and say, this is the same thing that happened. They cut rates too soon. They reignited inflation. It got out of control. Paul Volcker had to jam rates to unreasonable levels for 2 years to bring the economy to a complete halt, basically, right?
Yeah.
Well, rates were 21%. Think about it. My first mortgage was 15.5%.
Kenny, as you know, for whatever reason, I always like looking at old trucks. It amuses me at night when I have nothing to do, right? And I bought mine because I drive in Chicago winters in the morning, so I don't want something. So I buy this older truck, and it's like 10 grand, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to say it was 18 months ago. If somebody offered me 12 for it today,
yeah,
I'd have to say no because I can't duplicate it for 12.
Yeah, correct. Right. You cannot.
Yeah, the idea that there is no inflation now that these people keep telling us is so insane. And on Saturday, I went to the Home Depot. These guys are doing work at my place. So I went and got these tiny little strap hangers.
Yeah.
And they're a buck at Home Depot. Online, they're 70 cents. But then it's 20 bucks to ship them. So, okay, I'm right back where I started from.
Right.
So I buy 25 of these things. I buy two chunks of 1 1/4 inch screws, 100 a piece, and a thing of nails. Maybe it was three things, $86.
Right.
And what,
right.
How could anybody remodel a house now or sign a contract to build a house for somebody over the next 2 or 3 years? You can't come close to that.
So that's the problem. But the problem is not that prices are still going up. They're not.
They remain
elevated from when they went up.
But if you go up 3 or 5% from where they were, you can't have that because it was a 40% bubble. Now anything on top of that is a gouge in your side.
Right. Correct. Which is why I think it's starting to happen, because there's now more houses for sale than there are buyers. I think you're going to start to see the housing market crack. And listen, as much as maybe I'm going to say, geez, I don't want to see my house go down in value, the fact is it has to in order to normalize,
right,
and take the fluff out. It has to. And so I do think if he leaves rates where they are, it's going to happen sooner, because it's already starting to happen. If he cuts rates, all he's going to do is create more demand and housing prices are going to take off again. And I think that's a mistake, which is why I think they should leave them right where they are.
Well, if he dropped, where would you say, where are we now? We're 4 1/4?
4 1/4, 4.5, yeah.
Where would you say, over 100 years, if you were in charge, what rate would you want to maintain in a federal funds rate over 100 years? I'm going to say 3.5.
I would say 3 3/4, 4 is probably.
We're pretty darn
right.
Close.
So we're pretty close, because I think historically, if you look, I think historically we're between 3.5 and 6, and so 4 1/4 is not way way out of line. We're not at the high end of that range. We're actually in the middle, but even towards the closer end to the low end of that range.
Well, if he goes to 4,
yeah,
you know, under pressure or not,
right?
I don't see any major deal. If we do 1, like the president's talking about, how much money do we have to pour in the system to get that down to 1? What do we got the running money supply up? 20%, for God's sake?
Right. We'd have to pour a lot to get it down to 1, which I don't think is correct. Listen, the president can jump up and down all he wants and say he needs 100 basis points cut. I think it's ridiculous. And I think almost every economist would agree with you that it's ridiculous. Right? I just don't see it. But a 25 basis point cut, while it's not going to mean anything to you and me, as consumers, because I had this conversation yesterday with Mitch Rochelle, right, about on the podcast about what's it mean. What's it mean is it will mean small businesses will be, you know, it makes a difference to small businesses, right, that they can start to refinance or they can start to borrow money at lower rates. And for them, it's a positive, even a 25 basis point rate cut. While it's not dramatic, it will move in the right direction for businesses. Maybe not so much for you and me, but for businesses, it will, and that's kind of important. Now, is it going to mean a ton? Probably not. Would 50 basis points be better? Sure. Do I think we're going to get it? Not anymore. I did 2 weeks ago. I thought he was going to cut 50 basis points in September. But after that PPI report and potentially what's coming on Friday with the PCE report, that's going to be expected to tick at 2.9%, which is the highest it's been in 5 months, right? So that's going to be another roadblock for him in terms of how can he justify.
We have to dash to hell here, but do you think for a second that if they lower that rate. All the stuff that came through Dodd-Frank, which nobody pays any attention to. Nobody pays attention to repeal that ridiculous law. If Kenny and Chief Plumbing Company is doing well and we've got five trucks and we want to go borrow $100,000 to totally outfit the fifth truck, yep, and we've never missed a payment with the bank for 25 years.
Right.
Two questions. At some point, they're going to make us sign over our house.
Yeah.
Which is insane. I'm going to say that quarter point doesn't reach us at all. We're still
no. I don't think it does. I agree with you. So I don't think it reaches you and me as the consumer.
It's certainly not going to reach anybody in a credit card.
No, 100% no. So it's not going to reach anybody in an auto loan either.
No. So what's the point? I mean, in terms of the same few people that the government's investing in now could borrow cheaper. Isn't that great?
Well, right. But the point is, I guess if the trend is lower, at some point it will affect you and I, right? If it goes down 50 or 75 basis points, then the consumer at the mortgage level will probably see a little bit of relief. They're not going to see relief on your consumer credit cards. They're not. They don't react to that.
I did a
half-assed. Consumer credit cards. When rates were 1%, revolving credit was still pushing 30%. Who are they kidding? It was 28%. And if you missed one payment, it went up to 32%. Yep. It's ridiculous.
I did a half-assed study. Probably was 2020, maybe 21, because it was later. From 2008 to 2020, wherever it was, when interest rates got down to 1 from wherever, from 6 or 7.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I found that credit card rates either were even or were up.
Yep.
So
yeah,
the idea, and yet you're going to see people on CNBC and Fox Business all day long, if they cut the rate, this is great for you. Your credit card rates are going to go down.
That's baloney. And you sure and I both talking 25% basis point cut does nothing for you and me. And honestly, if rates went back down to 2%, it still wouldn't do anything for revolving credit.
Well, Kenny, next week, tell me more about your show. And good luck with that. We'll talk next week. Anything we can do to promote or whatever, you know, we will.
All right, thanks.
All right, do we have Professor Hal?
Yes, we do.
Hey, how are you? Sorry to be running a little late, but I figured you could comment on what we were just talking about.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
We're doing the same. We've had beautiful weather. It's 72 during the day and 55 at night. It doesn't get any better for the last 4 days, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, and I don't remember Burlington or North Carolina being this mild in August. I mean, we had it great. Last night I went for my walk after the kids went to sleep and I did my office hours. I went on my walk at about 9:15, and man, it was pleasant. It felt like I was in Idaho. In Idaho, it can be 95 degrees during the day and then drop down to 55 at night in August.
Yeah, it's like air conditioners awesome. Be gone, windows open. It's beautiful.
Oh, I love it, yeah.
After 5 or 6 weeks of the most humid I've ever seen here in Chicago.
Well, you know, I am surprised about how, maybe I'm used to it now, or maybe I don't know. But man, when we lived here in North Carolina back before we moved to Utah, I couldn't be out in August, but now, I don't know, maybe it was 2 years living in New York, and my mother-in-law and father-in-law's house in Brooklyn, really no AC, humidity was off the charts in the summer, temperatures were in the 90s, 95, maybe I just got used to it, but
and New York
I've
holds
enjoyed the summer here.
New York holds the heat well.
Oh, it does, especially with all that concrete, the asphalt, black just absorbs. Black asphalt just absorbs all that heat and just gives it off.
I remember walking. We always have to wear suits when we were there, and I'm like, I'm dying.
You look at pictures of the 1950s or earlier. Everybody was wearing a suit. I don't know how they did it. Man.
They used to wear suits to ball games. Did you ever see what the hell's the name of it? Isaac Storm. You ever see it was a book I read, and it was Isaac Storm. It had to do with the hurricane that hit Galveston and basically killed all the people and just destroyed the whole place. It was 19-something-something. You know, Ricky, look that up, Isaac Storm. It was essentially erase Galveston from the map.
Yeah.
It was because it was going to be the terminal for all the shipping and everything. It all changed to Houston because they thought Galveston Island was now too dangerous.
Yeah.
But it had all kinds of animals that were all dead and people. Oh, it was just disgusting. But when you saw these people, they said how hot and humid the summer had been. Everybody's walking along in wool suits, ties, with a vest, with one of those stupid hats on. I'm going, what are these people doing?
Yeah, you know, it was a different time. People were just tough. My grandpa was tough. I mean,
well, they're all skinny, too. They were all real skinny.
Yeah, he was skinny and tough. I mean, I remember hearing the story about him getting run over by a combine, literally, and he broke his bones in 120 different places, and the doctors told him he wasn't going to walk again. Well, he proved them wrong. He was doing the rehab, and he was up and walking, like, within a year. I mean, he got ran over by a freaking combine.
Wow.
And when he was in his 70s, he was moving handpipe. Handpipe. Wow. Handpipe is, like, 3 inches in diameter, and each pipe is about 20 foot long, and you got to carry it about 20 yards every freaking morning, and there's about 30 of those pipes that make a line. And he was out there doing that at 70. And this is after a doctor said he wouldn't walk again. Well, so people were just freaking tough.
My grandfather, when he was 75, every morning would start his day with 12 chin-ups.
Wow. Nice.
Like, most people can't do one. You know?
Yeah, did he have a chin-up bar?
In
like,
the basement. Made his own in the basement, of course. He had to make it himself. Wow. And, but yeah, it's a... Audrey used to have a house down in Ogden Dunes, and it was this little log cabin, right? And you know, everybody kind of thought it was one of the original houses, but nobody knew, right? So all of a sudden, one day, some lady knocks on the door and said, "Hey, do you mind if I view the house?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" She goes, "My great-grandfather or somebody used to own this place, and I want to get some pictures and blah, blah, blah." Well, she left Audrey some pictures. And it was the only house on the block that you could see in the... Nothing but sand. There was essentially an outhouse before they had any plumbing. And these dudes are sitting out on what... They were lawn chairs, but they weren't the webbed ones. They're sitting out there in the full outfit. The tie, the hat, and the full suit. Sitting in the sand on a chair. In the suits. I'm going, what are these guys doing? No shorts. I don't think people own shorts and a t-shirt.
And there was no air conditioning back then. I mean, the South was unlivable.
Can you imagine what those wool outfits smell like? I mean, I don't want to go there.
Yeah. Well, I think what it was is people, if you notice, the older houses have very small closets.
Oh, yeah.
Like the ones in New York, they have really small closets. And I think what it was is people had very few clothes.
Yeah.
They probably had one or two suits, one for every day and one for Sunday.
Yep.
Then they had, you know, some shirts that they wore, that they switched out.
Yeah, you washed them once a week. But most of the houses, as best you could, there were always windows on, like, both sides. So if there was any kind of breeze, you had somewhat of a... Well, in Armand Hammer's book, when he grew up, he's a lot older than us. He was damn near 100, and he's been dead for 25 years. But he grew up in the garment district in New York, in the flat roofs. For those that don't know and don't care, if you don't have the insulation in a flat roof, you know, well, it's essentially an apartment, tenement building, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The sun beats down on it, and the attic gets really, really hot during the day.
Yeah.
And at night, that heat goes down. So it's actually hotter at night in the top few floors than it was during the daytime.
Yeah.
So they would sleep on the fire escape. The kid, it was one kid per step, and the parents got the platform.
Yeah.
I was thinking, how the hell could you sleep 15 stories up with cars honking and everything like that, with looking straight down and seeing how...
Well, when you're working as hard as they were, I can imagine them being in a deep sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, they work... You know, the hillbillies of the Appalachian get a bad rap for not being too bright, but I read a history about them, and they built their houses up on the slope. So the house would rise with the mountain, and they'd have a doorway at the bottom of the house, and then 20 feet higher or 10 feet higher, they'd have another doorway, and they would open the door and the air would just come naturally circulating through there and create a cooling sensation.
Yeah.
So people are a lot smarter than most give them credit for.
Well, it's called survival, I guess.
And I'll tell you, researching Turgot and Cantillon, those guys were freaking brilliant, man. I think Adam Smith needs to be put in the back seat in a child's car seat next to these two guys, because these guys' economics are just phenomenal. They applied it to this day, you know.
Do you ever, I'm not saying you should get hooked on this, but I'm hooked on this Quora. I mean, I'm on there for sports and other stuff, and somehow I must have listened. If you click on one, then they think that's what you're interested in, then they send them to you.
Yeah.
Somehow I've had a steady stream of like 25 or 30 people that were all involved. And every time I get one of these, who's the first person I think of? You. Because they're all these original mathematician physicists and stuff that are trying to figure out the speed of light and this and that and the other thing and quantum physics. So I'm sitting there, how the hell can these guys, they look like a bunch of slumps in these three-piece suits, and it's like 1895, and somebody's going through the mathematics for quantum physics, and I'm going, how does anybody, I have no idea what they're talking about today. How do those guys, how do you think something like that up?
Yeah.
One guy's talking about some brilliant mathematician and how he was telling everybody with this problem that nobody could ever solve, and it was on the board, and then went on to the rest of the class. Well, some guy comes in 15 minutes late, listens to the rest of the class. It's a Friday. He sees the other problem. He thought it was homework. He took it home, and he walked in with the answer on Monday morning. The guy goes, nobody's ever been able to solve that. And the guy had like 15 pages of calculations and walks in with it.
I think the key is just a curiosity and just wanting to find a solution. I remember from the earliest age, you know, I wanted to solve the problem or fix it. I was always fixing stuff around the house. I could take something apart, put it back together at the youngest of age. I mean, I was maybe 6 or 7. I could take apart a radio and put it back together, not have any extra parts. I mean, I just was able to take apart things and put it back together. I could visualize the physics. Do you remember those physics tests we had taken?
Oh, yeah.
Those mechanical physics tests with levers and pulleys?
Yep. Yeah, those were part of like the janitor's test in the city and stuff.
Yeah, that stuff.
If you turn the wheel this way, you turn the wheel this way, where does this gear go? That kind of thing.
When I would look at those problems, my mind, it would look like a cartoon.
Nobody could solve those today. What if you gave that to one of your class today? Who could solve it?
I don't know, but I could imagine those things turning or pulling in my head. And I just always was able to find the solution. I was always able to fix it. To this day, I'm fixing my van. I love my 2012 van, my 2008 car, because I can fix it if it breaks. You know, these new cars, you need an engine puller to pull out the alternator. With the cars I own, I can pull them out.
Well, yeah, plus the brake sensors, you'd never be able to get the sensors. But the part that fascinates me is you can sort of look around at phenomenon. I mean, there's light, there's this, there's that, there's sound. But all of a sudden, for somebody to get a blackboard, invent calculus or whatever they use, and prove to you the speed of light versus mass, you go, how the hell did you get from looking at it on the blackboard? I mean, just...
Well, Newton invented the calculus to make, because the algebra is not a great tool for calculating orbits of planets. So he invented the calculus to make that job easier. And he invented it about the same time Leibniz did. Now, if Newton and Leibniz didn't invent calculus, you know, 400 miles apart or whatever it was, maybe 500 miles apart, somebody else would have invented it. So this idea that we need this person in history to do this, it's actually a fallacy, because there's other people, he's got to wait for them to come along.
But it's a step function. It's a step function. Once you learn something from somebody, then everybody else can learn twice as much taking it forward.
It's how the literature's built in the scientific research, right? The best guy that ever, the guy that really brought this home to me was a guy that was the CEO or president of Vivint Home Smart Company in Utah.
Okay.
He gave a speech at the NBA Power Lunch series that I attended one year when I was with Westminster, and he told a story of his dad driving him through like Logan, Utah, and they passed by a cemetery, and his dad goes, "See that guy, that tombstone right there? The guy buried underneath that tombstone? When he was alive, he thought if he didn't do this, it would never get done." And I'm like, that's interesting.
Well, but it's also, I think there's a difference. I mean, if you go back over however place somebody was, if somebody put a rudimentary wheel together, I think that my intelligence is, I'm perfectly capable of going, oh, wait a minute, if that's what you got, if we put two together, I don't think I'm the guy that made the wheel in the first place. So the people who give you the little step function, I think there's a lot of people that are capable of going, wait a minute, if that's true, I can take that in five different directions. But it still doesn't make you the first guy.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, it's
Here's the issue. Here's the real issue. It is government that prevents technologies from taking root. Because government, what does it do? It creates a system that protects the people who are currently benefiting from the current state of technology. And we can go back to the steam engine. The steam engine was known to the Greeks, and a German had a steam engine going up and down rivers in Germany in the 1700s. The people who worked in the wooden boat, sailboat, rowboat industry, they felt threatened, and they burned down the guy's boat, and the government protected them from the technology. And so it's the free society where the big leaps and advances come from. We don't have to worry about China, because China's not going to be a free nation. What we have to worry about is us being free, no matter what happens in the world.
Well, you got to worry about them because
the freest nation on
the
planet.
You got to worry about them not because of innovation, because they steal stuff from other people.
Yeah, but you know what? They steal it, and then they, you know, the way the, you know, Mao, he did this. They locked the technology in. They locked it in the day, and they had, what, 40 years of sheer utter poverty. That's what central planning does. It locks in the technology of the day, and the freest society is always going to win out. The society that is the freest, the society that allows you to profit off your passions. I don't like what Adam Smith said regarding self-interest. He should have used the word follow your passions. Those who follow their passions are free to profit from their passions. In that society, you're going to have the greatest improvement in the
I know you hate it when I say this, little Milty, but he would say that every day, that the only way you can have a true monopoly is if government protects
exactly.
you from other people.
100% agree with that, because, you know, a company like an aluminum company can have a monopoly. They could be the only player. But if you're charging a monopoly price, guess what? People are going to invent a new material, or they're going to switch to a different material. You know, they have a wood product where they infuse it. They infuse wood with like this chemical, and it turns it into a structure that is more tough and strong than steel. That's what happens. So monopolies can't exist in a market system. They can only thrive when they're protected by government.
Well, some people maintain some sort of a, you know, a competitive edge for a long time, maybe not forever, but you know, everything.
Part of that, though, Tom, if they're doing that without government help, they're not raising their prices.
Right.
They're keeping them low to keep those switches from happening.
Well, that's right. But he would always talk, and every time you can imagine, if you come from that school, and he was a monetarist, but he was also kind of a, what do you want to call it, a competitive guy. Whatever it was, I wouldn't call it libertarian, but it was he was into competition. And
I think he's the one that in his youth he was more central planner. He's the one that pushed through the income tax withholding. So I mean, he was more.
I don't know, but he would talk about, you know.
But he grew up and he changed and he evolved.
But say a toll road, for instance. Now, if you're gonna give, you can't have two toll roads, right? It would be a major pain in the ass. So there has to be one toll road, or it has to be. You really only want one gas main down the middle of the street. It's totally inefficient to have two. But you can give that to a gas company or to toll, but there's nothing that says you can't have an auction for somebody to put, you know, when we used to take cash, 300 guys that take cash in the toll booths and have private firms run it with competitive bidding. You don't have to make sure that they're all government employees. A lot of times you can actually have bidding for, you know, electric companies. You can have bidding for power to access. Maybe the government should own the grid, and that people should bid for putting stuff on the grid. There's always ways to make it more competitive than it is, correct?
Well, you look at cell phone industry. It was monopolized. And then when they ended the monopoly in telecommunications, what do we have? We have a bunch of companies that own cell towers throughout the world, throughout the United States. Individual companies own these cell towers. It's not unlike a road or a railroad or a pipe. But there's incredible amount of competition in that space.
Let's kick that one around after break, will you?
Yeah.
Because you hit on you like to press the nerves on the chief, and you just you just press the nerve on one of the best investments that I never made. SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures down 22. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up back Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 5. NASDAQ Futures down 25. Right about where we were when we came in. That's why we haven't been talking too much about it. Dow Futures down 42. We have over in Europe. We had a real slow day yesterday. DAX down 100.4%. FTSE down 33.4%. Wow, CAC around down 116, 1.5. French stock slide as Paris government faces risk of collapse. Well, that's kind of serious. Risk of collapse. Nikkei down 413, was a full 1%. Hang Seng down 304, 1.2%. Shanghai finally down. It's been up almost every day. Down 15.4%. So we got negativity all around here. Yesterday we were, S&P was down 27, NASDAQ down 47. The Dow was down 350 after being up 800 on Friday. But the Dow, individual stocks in there are so high priced. Just remember when you look at the Dow that I think the multiplier is like 6.9. So the stock's down a buck, that's almost $7 in the average, so it's a little weird. Bonds, unchanged 4.28. The Bund unchanged 2.74. Oil, down a buck 11, 63.69, just buried in this 62 to 66 range, at least recently. Brent down a buck 5, 67.75. Gold, up 8.10, 34.25. Silver down 15 cents, 38.54. My people that have wanted to be in gold for 2 or 3 years, boy, oh boy, they've done really well this year. First 2 or 3 years, maybe we're a little early, but this year it's all come home to Papa for a lot of the investors that like that. The dollar, 116.5 on the euro, and 134.8, so the dollar's a little bit stronger. When we have crypto, Bitcoin down $1,000, 110.315. Again, this was 121 of like 2 weeks ago, so it's reasonably down, and that thing's like down 10%. Ricky, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. 51 degrees right now with a high of 73. Mostly sunny and very nice weather today. Tonight will be clear with a low of 59 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 78 degrees right now with a high of 97. Clouds and breaks of sun with a thunderstorm in the area today. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 80 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 35 minutes. We're looking at 53 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wall, 56 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 30 minutes, and lastly 15 minutes, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. MLB, White Sox beat Royals yesterday 7-0, and Diamondbacks lose to Brewers 5-7. Today we got Royals at White Sox at 6:40 p.m., Diamondbacks at Brewers at 6:40 p.m. as well, and Cubs at Giants 8:45 p.m. Back to you guys.
You stay up and watch the Cubs?
One more time?
You stay up and watch the Cubs out in San Fran?
No.
I might try to. I don't know if it's going to work out that way. Anyway, Hal, communications story. There I was in the OEX back in the 80s, had to be. You know, and we all had some scratch. It might have been early 90s. So the thing was, when your cell phone started going, it was all about these relay towers, right?
Yeah.
Because you paid these roaming fees once you got out of your area. So there was a relay tower somewhere out west that guys in the pit were going to invest in. And they asked me, and I'm thinking, you know, I was an idiot when I say that. It was because I had 9 or 10 traders working for me. I was foolish enough to think that maybe the industry was going to last the way it was. And, you know, instead of just taking the money I made and firing everybody, I didn't. But I'm going to say, I keep thinking it was the one in Kearney, Nebraska. I don't know if you know where the hell Kearney, Nebraska is, but you can't get through Nebraska without making if you were a trucker or whatever, if you made a phone call, that cell tower was one of the last to cave in, and I don't know who bought them or what happened to them. I'm going to say the roaming charge was like $6 for every phone call those guys got. So if you're driving through and somebody called you, you're like, oh, bleep. Somebody called you, it was like $6. I can't imagine how much money they made on that tower.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like a long distance back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Young people, they don't have a clue. I mean, when you called somebody collect long distance.
Oh, God.
My goodness. Well, your bill could be $600.
I remember my grandparents and the people from Columbus, the old Italian group, if somebody called, they'd yell to everybody, come on in, say hello to Joe, it's long distance.
Hi, Joe. Hey, Joe.
Well, I mean, you might, but the listeners, I don't know, I got off on this tangent. You remember Watts Lines?
Watts Lines?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Maybe I was a little kid.
Watts Lines were a line you could buy that you could make all the long-distance calls you wanted for the same price. It was like $2,000.
Oh, really? Okay.
$2,000, $3,000 a month, you know, in 1975 or six.
I mean, holy.
It was
well,
big
in
dough.
1975, we didn't have a phone. Okay. We had to drive to town to use the payphone.
God. Well, one of my
mom would do that a lot.
One of my first, matter of fact, my first business trip, I was a financial analyst at Allied Van Lines, right, of all places, and I wasn't moving stuff. But I was in the small business research, and they let me go out and if there was an agency that wasn't doing so hot, they'd send me out there to help the guy out, right? So I could tell you stories, maybe over a drink someday. Well, they also had all these companies. Allied Van Lines had something incredible like 25 inbound watts and 30 outbound. They had one of the biggest phone bills in the country because all these trucks run all over the place. Were Allied. And the trucker would call in on the 800 watts, and you'd call the trucker on the other one. But also where you were in the country was a big deal. So you wanted to be in the middle of the country because the watts line would cover more ground. So in Omaha also had this Strategic Air Command base. Omaha was totally wired for this stuff. So I fly out there, and everybody in this one street, there had to be 30 of these things. They looked like concrete pillboxes. And inside was just massive amounts of switching equipment. So I was to go out and see if the place needed another row of the switching equipment because we wanted like five more outbound watts lines. And then when I got to the trading floor, there were tie lines where you picked up the phone here and the guy picked it up on the New York Stock Exchange. We just went to one number. That was a certain different price. But then somebody invented a machine where if you don't think it makes any difference, or the listeners probably don't, you pick up. You know, I'm not talking about rotary dial, but that was even worse. So you hit the number, I'm going to call Hal in Carolina. Well, how long does it take me to hit the buttons? Well, now I'm on the line, right? So somebody invented a machine. Say it takes me, what do you figure it takes, Ricky, for you to dial a number fast? 5 seconds?
Well,
four?
You got to throw in the dial too, right?
Well, I mean, just say it was after that. It was digital. Yeah.
Okay.
But now it takes you what, 5 or 6 seconds? Okay. That somebody invented a phone where you could make the dial in 5 seconds, and then it would electronically shoot you onto the line in like a tenth of a second. So you saved the 4 or 5 seconds. And if you're making calls from the trading floor, you know, 100,000 calls a day, that's a big deal. You could cut back.
Yeah.
You could cut back. This was the innovation on this was absolutely spectacular. And because I was sort of part of it by doing the communication stuff for Allied. It was fascinating to watch. I mean, if you didn't have a watch line, what was if you reversed the charges to somebody or did a person-to-person call, God bless, if you can even remember what that is, Ricky, if I was going to call your mom in New York, I could call her person-to-person where if she didn't pick up, there was no charge to the call. But if she did pick up, it cost me like 50% more. So if you weren't the person, the call didn't count. Remember that, Hal?
Well, I don't really remember too much. I remember the rotary phone my mom had, and I would try to speed up the dialing by
good luck with that.
Pulling the dial back.
Yeah, no, you can't do that.
My whole point here is that the setting that market free led to incredible innovation. Now we walk around. My last cell phone, I got it for no price, zero price.
But it had to wait for the technology. Yeah. It was all copper wire. You couldn't pour more much on there, right?
Well, according to this professor at Cornell, we had these like laser-style weapons that were developed in the 1960s by the RAND Corporation that could direct energy at something and cause a fire. So, I mean, technology, it was the setting it free that allowed all those improvements to occur so rapidly.
It was on Star Trek. We all knew what the phasers did.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is when we set the market free is when it really exploded at that point, right? We went from, like, pagers. We went from handheld radio phones to pagers to cell phones
in pretty quick order. You could set the market free all you wanted, but until you had digital, the light.
The freedom, though, drives the innovation.
Right, but I'm saying until somebody put a satellite up in orbit, you could do all you wanted with cell phones. They weren't going anywhere.
Well, I'm telling you, if the satellite market were free, we would have had a lot quicker.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, I mean, you could do whatever you wanted, telephone line, right? But until you had the fiber cable where you can have how many bazillion phone calls in one cable, yeah. you couldn't go very far. What I'm saying, the people owned the copper owned it.
If those markets were set free, which we can't observe, in a different universe where we open a door and we go into this box that was, I forget what they call it, but you go into this box and you can open up infinite many doors and you can see a different universe. I like to go open up the door and view the United States in a different universe where the Constitution had never been changed and we had this, and government didn't try to skew the rules to benefit them and their friends. If it was just set and left alone, I think we would have got there 50 years earlier.
I don't doubt it, but some of it, God, is it hard to? You think it's harder?
We'd be in flying cars right now, Tom.
Do you think it's harder than agreeing with somebody on Stocks and Jacks? What I'm saying is that until you had somebody invent the cell phone where you needed the towers, and then all of a sudden, then you needed the satellite. Until you got the fiber optic, you couldn't stuff much more. And it took years to put the fiber optic cable in to get the right of ways.
All I'm saying is the speed of adoption, the speed of discovery, is faster, the freer.
Right, so now that I've led you down this road, I'm just looking at a headline here that now Trump thinks that they should take big chunks of all the defense stocks, and Frontier Airlines thinks they might have to go after Sprint. How does that, and what you've just said now for the last 40 minutes, How does that work in your theory of life?
Yeah, I don't want any government ownership of any firm.
I kind of thought you might say that.
Yeah, we have a long history of government ownership of firms. It started pretty much in the early 1900s. And a great example is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is basically a government-created monopoly. The Federal Reserve is owned by the biggest banks, and it's also part owned by the federal government because any profit that's left over gets remitted to the Treasury. So we have a banking system that has been monopolized and created by
government. But it's gotten worse over time, and it's uneven. I mean,
oh yeah, it's
but
it's bad.
if you'd have come to the Chicago in the 70s and 80s, even now to a certain extent, because Illinois was the last state to allow branch banking, you would have thought there was no more competitive industry than banking. There's one on every corner, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, now it's at a point where nobody, because of stuff like Dodd-Frank, you can't give loans unless, you know, somebody has to sign over their kidney and things like that. They've tried to bury the competition out of
it. It's like the usury laws in France and England. They interest was illegal, but they still kind of charged it.
But you can still,
in a way, where if you didn't pay the loan back, we're going to take your daughter and sell her into slavery.
But if you have, you know, the Hal Plumbing Company, you still have, I could probably name you 20 smaller banks here where you can go try and get a loan and probably be successful. You don't have to walk into Wells Fargo or City where they don't want any part of you. But in some states, I think, don't have that. And well, it's, you know, way less here than it was, right?
Here's the funny thing. The small banks are really important. The Chinese recognized this in the 1970s. They had one bank, the People's Bank, and it had lots of branches throughout China. Well, I think it was Deng who decided to foster a banking system where you have these small regional banks making business loans. And that's one of the reasons why China really took off. It's one of the many reasons why it took off. It was basically setting the industry free. And you need those small banks to make loans to small businesses. I'm starting some research with some colleagues that began with the opportunity zones. I wanted to extend my research on Startup New York, which are basically enterprise zones, similar kind of idea. But about half the counties in the United States have opportunity zones. They were, it was begun under that 2017 tax reform bill. And we want to see what happened to firm growth. We have to control for the effects of COVID and the lockdowns. But and I think that we can do that pretty easily. But I think what we're going to see is maybe these opportunity zones had a positive effect. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But they might have had a positive effect in the counties that they were installed in. Now, they're investment opportunity zones. They're not tax-free zones like Startup New York. So, but that led me to other questions like, was a COVID lockdown? Because we hear about Nazi economic policy where the Führer, Hitler, wanted three, maybe eight large corporations running all of commerce in Germany, and he wanted to get rid of all the small businesses. I want to, after looking at the data,
sounds familiar, doesn't COVID. It? Doesn't it sound
I
familiar?
I want to see if COVID had that effect.
What do you think's going on right now?
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to put, I'm sure it's not high on a list of emails you sent. Lou sent us that email, and if I probably could hit on him Thursday, I'd send us again. How many, if Trump's group goes ahead with this investing in these defense firms, you look at, sometimes you don't know how cogent you are, how sage you are. Take a look at that picture, and maybe we'll find it from Lou, and we'll put it out next time you're on.
Yeah.
Of all the combinations that have taken place in the defense industry, where did it go back to, like 1960 or something? It's you look at it and you go, holy bleep, Batman. There's got to be 50 or 60 or 100 of them. All these companies that, you vaguely remember the name if you read, when you read down them, are all part of like five or six. Now, there's some people that are still in Montpa, and there's people in Denver that Lou says are doing some of the creative edge like you're talking about, and some of the laser war stuff and all those other kinds of things. But by and large, you're talking five companies have absorbed everybody. And now, if you see the government, meaning Trump and his gang, start grabbing pieces of the five that are left, God, what does that sound like? It sounds exactly like you're talking about in Nazi Germany, doesn't it?
It's the opposite of where we want to go. We want to be
exactly
the freest nation. We want to be the freest nation.
Well, then again, when you say that, who's we?
Yeah.
You and I is we're
I,
not we're
I
not
do.
We're not
I want to be the freest nation.
I know, but in a trading floor, if you use the word we, what would somebody say to you? Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket? So the you and me,
I've
we.
I've been on trading floor, so I don't know how you guys how you traders think.
it's a different world. But now you and me, we don't seem to be the Oval Office we right now, do we?
Yeah.
I think it's abysmal, to be honest with you. And I also think that if everybody's got to go hat in hand to the Oval Office to get financing, why am I trading stocks and bonds all day for people? Isn't that how we're supposed to get financing in this country?
Yeah.
By the way, why wasn't, if you and I were around when the Fed was invented, they say we're supposed to maintain inflation and employment, right? Stable both.
Yeah.
I think you and I might have added and maintained competition in the banking industry. We'd have been thrown out of the room.
Oh, we would have been thrown out of the room because the Federal Reserve was not invented to maintain competition in the banking system. It was intended to inflate the currency. Now, they wanted to inflate the currency in a way where it's only 2-3% a year, right? Because then the pain isn't felt for 100 years. If the Federal Reserve had inflated at 10% or 15%, then there would have been outrage and it would have probably been terminated. But it does 2% a year. And then 2% goal of inflation over 100 years has done to the dollar what Rome
did.
I don't
think that 2% goal for 100 years. I think Milton Friedman in those days, it was zero.
Yeah.
Where did this 2% come from?
What I'm saying is, if you look at the CPI, you look at the long-run CPI, and you trust those numbers. And I think before the 90s, the CPI was relatively... It wasn't as bad as it is today. But if you look at the CPI and you look at the M2 money growth, they've been creating inflation since the inception of the Federal Reserve. They've gotten really good at it. Now, the 2% goal is a recent thing. In the 1980s, they passed a resolution that the Fed had to maintain a 0% inflation rate. And the Fed, you know, ignored that, and they've been doing 2%.
I don't think that's ever been a statute. I think they came up with it because they've talked about it.
It was like a non-binding. Well, it was like a non-binding resolution.
When you say 2%, that's you're picking out a number. I'm gonna go back a little older than you. The economic nirvana. You didn't want to be sick back in those days and stuff, but economic nirvana, if it's 500 years from now, we go back into some kind of horrible system here, which looks like we're going to, people will pick out this middle-class time in the U.S. is probably the single 25-year period of an economy that's ever been like that. And I'm going to say it's probably from 1948 to 1947 to 1972, say. So what is that, 25 years? Where if you go back to the 50s and the 60s, and I was really young then, but I remember the 60s, inflation was about 1.5-2, okay, which was okay, because I'm going to say the average wage growth was 2.5-3.
Yeah.
So if you're, I mean, my stepfather, my dad was dead, but my stepfather, he and my mom bought his house, 1958, and they paid, I think, $18,000 for it, maybe. And so my mom, of course, had the money, even though she was a widow. So she had the down payment. My stepfather had a pretty decent job. He'd been a GI Bill. He was a CPA. It wasn't a CPA, but he was an accountant. So within 2 or 3 years, he not only got maybe a 3% increase a year, but he also was getting promoted. Pretty bright guy. And inflation's a little bit, so the house is now worth $20,000, you know, a few years later. And now I'm going to say for 5 years, the mortgage payment is half of one of his paychecks. So it wasn't the 2% that was the key. It was the 2% with the wages growing 3%.
Yeah.
So the difference was everybody was making progress. And the psychology was, if somebody else got a bigger raise than you, it's because, you know, you played golf on Saturday and he worked on. There was and everybody's growing. Even if it's to a certain extent, the psychology is so much different. Now people have a feel, and they're right on the feel. Now whether their response to it is something I would agree with, or you, that's something else. But they're right on the feel now that everybody's behind the curve on this inflation. 85.
Not everybody.
Well,
not
okay, everybody. But 80. I'm going to say 80-85% of the population has not kept up in 20 years with the inflation. And we've been lied to day by day. So everybody's feel, even without telling you, if you could burrow into their brain, is the guy who's somehow doing way better is somehow stealing from me. And you can't tell me that's not the attitude. I mean, right now, if somebody's making a 10% wage, okay, how's he getting it out of my hide? Because how else could he be getting it? Right? Because it's just not something everybody else is feeling.
I think the big catalyst in the last, 20 years was when the Fed was given the tool to pay interest on reserves. The interest on reserves is a way to keep money locked into the banking system. The problem is that money leaks out, and it's leaking out in the form of loans. And who's getting those loans? People who are using margin debt and leverage to buy assets. And that's why you see Bitcoin screaming up, why you see stock market. I look at the stock markets.
Well, as Carl says, whenever you have what you just said, whenever you have some people being able to borrow money at less than the real inflation rate, you got a problem.
Yeah, the government is basically paying their interest.
Right.
Yeah.
But then you and I are 25%.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
you look at the price earnings ratio, and it's like almost 40. And for about 100 years, it was roughly about 14. And now it's like 40.
But don't. Go one step further on that, if you don't mind. Look at the revenue per share basis.
Yeah, that's probably even worse.
Well,
huh?
I mean, I'm looking at this, the one I look at, and please, this is not, don't sell anything on my account. It's probably going to go flying up today. Palantir, the stock was trading 180, I think. Now it's down to 155. You know what the revenue per share is?
What's that?
The revenue per share. What do you think it is?
Well, 40 is on average for earnings, so maybe I don't know, 100. I'm just guessing.
Well, I'm saying their revenue per share is a buck and a half.
A buck and a half.
Yeah. Well, when Cisco reached its peak in 2000, whenever back in the 2000 bomb thing, stock was trading 66, and the revenue per share was 6. And that's why I'm so nervous with people now saying, watch out for these stocks, which isn't to say that that particular stock can't grow. Okay, but if you take the top 10 of these, Microsoft is like 15, 15 to 1 revenue per share or something like that. Once you start NVIDIA, all these things are way up. Now, some of Meta's not so bad, but when you start getting to those numbers, my feel is...
It's a bubble. It's definitely a bubble.
Well, but the thing is, you can't, and I won't
it's
anyway...
It's a bubble of bubbles.
But you can't say, sell Microsoft. You can't say, sell Palantir, because now you've got... What you can say is take the top 15 companies. Some of them are probably going to double and triple, and they're the best buy on earth. It could be Temp Palantir, for God's sake, because I don't know. But what you can say, not all 15 can get there. or we better find another planet, because we need double the GDP for them all to double, right?
Yeah.
That's what I felt in 2000. I actually wrote a column on it. Here's the five big stocks. Let's say two of them are long-term holds, and they're going to be the best thing on earth, which Microsoft obviously was. It's not going to be all five. It can't be. We don't have enough GDP.
Yeah.
Am I right? I mean, I don't know if you ever thought of that, but...
Well, there's a churn. You guys mentioned this earlier when you were talking to Kenny. There's a churn. These companies get replaced. You know, Intel got knocked down by AMD, and AOL got knocked down by Google. You know, just there's a churn. And it's really hard to know which of the current companies are going to be able to navigate out of that churn and not get crushed.
Ricky, can you do us a favor? Put a little note over there for next Tuesday. We have Hal on. And I promise I will go and find... You ever heard of the Morgan Stanley Nifty 50?
No, huh? What's up with
that? When I first started in the business in the early 80s,
the
Nifty 50 was Morgan Stanley's list of stocks that were essentially a lifetime hold. They were going to be the stocks that were going to be...
I bet one is around.
I'm going to... Boy, I'll tell you what, but the stuff on there was like Polaroid. And if I read off these lists, I'll bet we can remember, we'll be able to recognize 10 names out of the 50. And then that was Morgan Stanley, which is a real firm, that was their prediction of the 50 stocks that were going to make it to the turn of the century and still be dominant.
Yeah.
And we'll go through that list a little bit. We'll go through real fast.
Tom, real quick, I want to give a shout out to a former student of mine. He called me in 2018 or 17. And I introduced him to my brothers who do a small... They do payroll and tax returns for small businesses.
Oh,
I introduced him to
that.
And he asked me about Bitcoin. And I told him, man, if I had money, I'd be putting into Bitcoin. He bought $22,000 worth of Bitcoin. Then he told me the other day that it's now worth... He hasn't sold any of it. It's now worth like $247,000.
Is he ever going to sell it, or is he going to watch it make a U-turn?
I don't know. I'm kind of thinking I would hang on to it. I'm telling you, Bitcoin was ever accepted as payment for government taxes throughout the world, you would see it replace the dollar pretty quick, I think. That's my view on it.
I totally disagree, but
I think it'd become currency.
I think it could easily become currency.
Yeah.
Not, but without anything behind it, I don't think it ever... But what's the value?
Scarcity's behind it. That's what's back.
But I mean,
that's what's backing
okay,
it.
But it's... According to them, there is, but who's to say that... I mean, Kenny and I had this discussion a few weeks ago. He says, well, it's going to be, we got to go, but he goes, we'll talk about this next week too, because it's going to be regulated. I go, Kenny, how can you regulate it when there's nobody to call? What are you talking about? I said, well, if you regulate PTI, FINRA calls up, my brother picks up the phone. if somebody makes a complaint that they have 300,000 in Bitcoin and where is it, they can't get in, who exactly do you call? How do you regulate a non-existent thing? If the government starts to regulate it, and they find it...
I don't want the government to regulate.
Okay, but if they find stuff is mysteriously disappearing out of there, who do you call to investigate? I mean, how do you regulate something that doesn't exist and people? I mean, that's a strength, but it's also a weakness, right?
Government regulations usually end in a bad story.
We don't have time to get on that road, but what I'm saying is, how do you regulate something with when you can't pick up the phone and say, who the hell's in charge? There's nobody. or there is somebody. Nobody knows who it is. It's a problem. I think, and we'll see how it plays out. You could very well be right.
Yeah.
Anyway, bud, what do you got going this weekend? Anything good?
I'm going to meet up with my Navy buddies Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're having a reunion at the motorhome in southeastern Virginia.
Cool.
We have a park there. Yeah, so we're going to have a reunion.
Is somebody stopping at the liquor store?
Well, I'm sure this group will be bringing their they'll be BYOBing.
God. Well, we'll have a nice time and be safe, bud. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures down 25. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.